Lecture 24, Machiavelli, The Prince.
In our last lecture, we examined the Analects of Confucius, that collection of his sayings, for he never wrote a book, that expressed his belief and his teaching to his students that we must follow the path of truth. We explore this in terms of our theme of duty. What is your duty? And how do we live our life? We saw that Confucius was one of three great teachers in history, and we compared him as a teacher and his ideal of education with that of Jesus and Socrates. Now, why do I single out these three? Muhammad most certainly is a very great teacher, but he was also a man of politics and of warfare, who united the people of Arabia. But Socrates, Jesus, and Confucius, these were teachers. I want us to turn now to the theme of ambition, perhaps of duty to yourself, if you are a person of ambition, and to one of the most influential figures in history, Machiavelli, and his great work, Il Principe, what we generally translate by The Prince, but which is far better translated into English by The Leader. The same way that the Germans in the Third Reich spoke of Hitler as Der Führer, Mussolini as Il Duce in the days of fascist Italy, Machiavelli's Prince, his Il Principe, is a leader. And his book is all about power. How to get power and how to hold on to it. That is the summit of ambition for the man or woman who wants to be a true leader and feels themselves able to play the game of politics, whether corporate politics, university politics, or what we call politics, the politics of the state at the highest level. Socrates was influential because he laid the foundation for the entire intellectual framework that we call the ideal of the university today. Jesus laid the foundation for Christianity, and Confucius for the entire civilization of China. Machiavelli did not transform people's thinking. He simply told it the way it was. And the lessons of Machiavelli are written, he would tell you, throughout history. In fact, he would say, go right back to your palate of Narmer and the beginning of the unification of Egypt. Power. That is what people want. That is what people will do anything to obtain. Machiavelli would say to you that what Confucius and Socrates and Jesus have told you, why, that's all fine and good. Very nice, you know, to teach in schools. But people do not behave that way. People do not behave in terms of do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The law of history and what we see every day is do others in before they do you in. That is what it is really about. And possibly you can live your life doing unto others if you're a saint. But if you were in the real world, you had better live by the clear rules of power. Who was this man, Machiavelli, whose book, Il Principe, The Leader, Adolf Hitler kept by his bedside and said it was the most influential work he had ever read, and he turned to it again and again for guidance. Well, Machiavelli was born in Florence in 1469, in Italy of the Renaissance. And in Italy, that was divided into a number of kingdoms and republics of varying size, such as the Kingdom of Naples, or the Papal States of Rome under the Pope, or Florence, a republic, or Venice, the great republic of Othello, the play we discussed. Florence was a free city. It believed in its autonomy and liberty. It was governed by a democratic form of government, and it looked back to the ancient days of Roman glory. And it was, in its own way, a power able to vie with some of the greater powers of Europe. Machiavelli's family had some money, and they had some distinction, and he received a good education, focusing upon the Latin classics. He would have read Virgil, for example. He read the history of Livy, the great historian of the Roman Republic. He read the history of Tacitus, the historian of the Roman Empire. He read the lives of Plutarch, and came to believe that history was the tool to understand the present. He entered the bureaucratic service of Florence and rose fairly rapidly. He became a trusted agent of the Free Republic of Florence. He was given a number of diplomatic missions. He traveled widely. And he was a master of writing very clear reports. And in the writing of these reports on his diplomatic activity, he mastered the Italian language. It was common in the 15th century, of course, to write erudite books in Latin. But Machiavelli understood that the Italian language was a powerful vehicle. And he mastered his Italian prose by writing diplomatic reports. And he sharpened his understanding of how politics work. How politicians, whether they are senators of the Republic of Venice or whether they are kings and dukes, how they really operate and what matters to them. But in 1512, there was a sudden change in the politics of Florence. Florence was unable truly to compete with the great powers. It was conquered by the mercenary army of Pope Julius II. And the Florentine Republic and government was thrown out. And the Pope insisted that the old family of the de' Medici be reinstalled as dictators of Florence. And Machiavelli found himself accused of malfeasance, trumped up charges, no doubt, but nonetheless was forced into exile to his small family farm and removed from political affairs. And there he said, I went back to the world of antiquity. I began to study again. We think of Confucius in a way. He says, some people are born with knowledge, though I've never met one. Some people begin to study as I did. And some people turn to studying after great difficulties. Machiavelli turned back to studying after great difficulties. Every evening, he wrote to a friend, I take off my soiled everyday clothes and I put on my best garments, and I sit down to a feast and a dialogue with the great men of the past. They are my companions, great Scipio, great Alexander, great Julius Caesar, and I learn from them and from their writings the truth of power and politics. He set himself to write and would complete a very fine set of commentaries on the great historian Livy, but in this period of this disconsolation that struck Machiavelli in this moment of his deep sadness, he wrote at a fever pace a small book in which he distilled all the lessons of his study, The Prince. And he dedicated it to the de' Medici, ruling over Florence. It was his hope to be called back into power, to be given a position in the new government. But the work was too dangerous. People read it. It's circulated in manuscripts, but it's told the truth too openly. It said how things really were, and Machiavelli would never be called back. He would die in 1527, but he would leave that great legacy, The Prince. The theme of The Prince is power. How to get it, how to keep it. And you learn how to get it and how to keep it by the lessons of the past, of history, both of immediate, almost contemporary history, and of Greece and Rome. Now, of course, the first thing is, do you want power? Because if you don't want power, stay out of the arena. Do not get involved in politics unless you're willing to do whatever it takes. Be content to be a CPA in Newport News, Virginia. Do not get into the real world. But if you want power, step one is to understand what you want power over. Two, the vehicles of exercising power. And then three, once you're in power, how to maintain it. So it is a step-by-step how-to book on how to be a dictator. But I tell you, it is useful to you if you want to be a dictator in political life, if you want to be dictator of your corporation. It is useful. Step one, Machiavelli says, is what kind of entity are you going to be dictator of? And thus he goes through history and he sets aside and defines for us a series of possible political units. Republics are certainly there. But Machiavelli says, I will talk about this in much more detail in talking about Rome. You want to be a dictator, and that by its very character is a monarchy, the rule of one man. What kind of monarchies exist? There are monarchies that are hereditary. You inherit the power from your father. There are monarchies that are mixed. That is to say, there are monarchies that you might inherit, but you expand the power over other areas. And then there are newly won monarchies that you conquer and rule by yourself as an innovator. Now, the hereditary monarchy, you inherit the corporation from your father, let us say. You inherit your position from your father. That's the easiest kind to rule over, Machiavelli says. There, what you want to do is not introduce innovations. Now, that's something you can do even if you're not a king. You take over a job, even if it's just running the local Rotary Club. Do not try to innovate. That always gets you in big trouble. It gets you in big trouble, one, with the people who have been there before, because you are implicitly criticizing what they did. And then people don't really want innovations. They may say they do. They may say they want to reform, but they will not stick up for you. So do not make waves if you inherit a position. But if you have a mixed monarchy, if you have your own base that you have inherited, but you want to expand your power, I don't know, you might think about taking over corporations through mergers. If you want to expand your power, then you must be able, one, not to make innovations in your old monarchy, but move ruthlessly to remove any possible danger to you in the new areas you have taken over. And here, the leader must be a person of the shrewdest ability to judge character. You must be able to judge that individual who will truly support you because they believe it is in their best interest. You must separate from them the person who is openly opposed to you, and you must separate from them the person who claims to support you, but you understand through your perception is a danger and a threat. And you can reward, as long as you keep a careful eye on those who truly support you and make sure they understand and realize that it is in their vested interest. But those who oppose you, you must remove. Boom. Understand this. People must be either well-treated or utterly destroyed. Do not go about with half measures. Do not punish somebody and say, you know, you're opposed to me and therefore I'm taking away your estates. No. Kill them and get it done with. And do it fast and at the beginning of your rule. Carrying on too long with constant executions and purges, that will create too much hostility and trouble. Do it all and get it over with, and then you can be celebrated as a just and magnanimous ruler. So punish people and do it thoroughly. In other words, you know, what is our equivalent today? We can't go out and execute somebody, can we? But you take over as boss, you fire that guy who was the competitor for you. Just fire him, boom. And you also put in his files letters that make it clear that he was an embezzler. Or maybe you're too shrewd for that. You just put in a perfectly neutral letter, but when they call you, you say why he was really fired. That's how we ruin somebody today so they can never come back. And finally, you want to be the leader of a new nation. You want to create a new monarchy. Well, there are some figures who have done this, who have completely reformed a nation or made it new. Moses. Didn't he create the people of Israel? So Machiavelli says, take away the religious side of it, he says, from the Bible. Just listen to me as history. Moses created the people of Israel. Cyrus created the Persian nation. What did both Cyrus and Moses have in common? They were warriors. Do not undertake to create a new nation unless you have the arms to do it, the weapons. Nobody gets into more serious trouble than the person who tries to reform and is a peace-loving individual. Why, in our own day in Florence, there was the monk Savonarola. And he preached a wonderful message of reforming our government. And he said, you know, people's private lives cannot be separated from their public lives. We must have a righteous citizen body, and thus we will have a righteous Florence. Well, the people flocked to his sermons, and for a while he held sway. But he didn't have an army to back him up. And where did he end up? Burned at the stake. That is the end of every reformer who does not have an army. So that brings us to our second point. You want to rule, you have got to have an army. An army at your disposal. What kind of army works best? Well, let's first just decide what kind of armies exist, Machiavelli says. Again, very scientifically going through and defining on history. There are professional armies. And there are militias. A militia of citizen soldiers. And the trouble with professional armies is they are not loyal. They serve only for money. And their leaders, as we have learned in Renaissance Italy, he says, are far more concerned with protecting their investment. That is to say, these soldiers that they have given to you on a contract basis, they don't want to see them killed. So they will make treacherous pieces with your enemies. A citizen militia, he says, is the very best army that you can have. And in fact, while he had been of influence in Florence, he had created a citizen militia. So you must have an army that is loyal to you, based on citizens that you treat well. So you're in power now. You're backed by a citizen militia. How then must you behave to maintain this power? Because let's get back to the central fact. You do not want this power to do good things. Do you understand that? You want power for its own sake. Who will tell you that later on? Will not O'Brien in 1984 say that to you? Remember? All the other totalitarian governments, like the Nazis and the communists, they wanted power to do something that they thought was good. Well, we don't. We just want power for its own sake. And that is what you must want. So how do you maintain this power? Well, what have you heard from Socrates and from Jesus and from Confucius? You have heard about this universal set of values, have you not? Wisdom, justice, moderation, and courage. You have been taught the lesson, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I want you to go back. The qualities you need to be a leader, to be a dictator, are you must be cunning. Not wise, cunning. You must be a fox. Two, you must be a liar. You must be stingy. And you must be cruel. That is how you must be. Now, please don't interrupt me and say, oh, Machiavelli, this is terrible. You're such a bad person. I'm not a bad person. I am just telling you how the world operates. Now, if everybody practiced the precepts of Christianity or of Islam or of Confucius, well, I would say, yes, go around and do unto others. But you know they don't. History shows it and everyday life shows it. So, point one, you have got to be shrewd. And a knowledge of people and how they behave, that is worth all the lessons and all the philosophy in the world. And you are not searching for ultimate truth. You are searching for what works. What works, for starters, is to be stingy. So many dictators have gotten themselves into big trouble by being lavish in their gifts. Julius Caesar was a great man, wrote masterful Latin, was a man of vision. How did he end up dead, assassinated? You read the play Julius Caesar, did you not? One, he was not a good judge of people. Had he been so, he would have killed all those who opposed him right after Pharsalus. Do you remember that? Instead, he pardoned them. He was Clement. That is a big mistake. He should have killed every one of them and left nobody to threaten him. And two, he was lavish in his gifts to the Roman people. Why, in the play, you met him even in his will, giving away his magnificent gardens by the Tiber. That's a big mistake, Machiavelli says. People don't appreciate anything you do. That is one lesson. And you will ruin yourself financially and have nothing to procure for you the financial vehicles of maintaining your power. People will appreciate you if you are stingy. Don't give them anything. And therefore, they won't come to expect anything. And of course, you make a big mistake to be generous at first and then suddenly find you've overspent your budget and you have to cut back. Just be stingy. Because power is about force and the money to buy that force and to keep it at your side. Now, two, you want to be cruel. It is better to be hated than loved. It is better to be feared than loved. People will not come to your aid if they love you unless it's convenient for them. If they fear you, they will do it. And the only way you make people fear you is by cruelty. Now, you've got to be wise or shrewd in the exercise of this cruelty. What you need frequently in carrying out cruel actions, such as carrying out a purge of all those who have opposed you or might oppose you, who are a threat to oppose you, is to have a fall guy. And he goes through a list of contemporary examples of fall guys. You bring in somebody. You say, you're my most trusted man. I'm going to make you second in command, but you've got to carry out this task. And there's always a fool out there who thinks that's the way to get ahead. Do just what you say and be loyal to you and carry out every dirty act you want him to or her to do. So they become your hatchet man. And as soon as they are done, you kill them. You expose their head publicly in the square to show you're not going to put up with that kind of bad action and ruthless action on the part of your subordinates. So you're out free and clear, but you've gotten a job done. So be cruel and go back to our lesson. Either treat people well or destroy them. And then you got to lie. Truth has no meaning for a leader. A good leader has got to be able to look you in the eye and to lie to you. That is the key to your success. And remember, never keep a promise unless it is convenient. Say whatever is expedient at the moment, and then go on and do what you want. Because remember this, there is no truth in what Cicero will teach you later on, that an inexpedient act is ever good for you. Cicero tells you that frequently it is the best thing to be, the best thing is to be honest, and that there can be no dichotomy between what is honest and what is expedient. That is just wrong. What is important is to succeed. And very frequently, dishonesty is the most expedient policy. Now, you must lie, you must be cruel, and you must be absolutely stingy with your money. One of the most important things you do once you have exercised these qualities is the kind of people that you surround yourself with. For a leader is first judged by what kind of immediate subordinates does he have. You want capable men and women around you. However, they must, in addition to being loyal, be absolutely under your thumb. they must be flatterers. But you, as a careful and astute leader, must know how to judge flattery. That's one of the most difficult things to do. Now, you are in a meeting, and you go around that table and you say, what do you think of this policy? People will raise their hand and they will say, that is a wonderful idea, Chief. We really like that. But there you are. You raise your hand because the boss comes back and says, no, now I really want to know what you think. I don't want yes men and women around me. I want people to tell me exactly what they think, because we could get into big trouble following this policy. So you shoot your hand up. You're going to disassociate yourself from all of these yes men and women. And you say, well, this is what I really think. I think you're making a big mistake doing this and this and this. Aha. You as leader are to smile. You know, I so appreciate what you have said. I've got one person here who will take an independent mind. That person has got to be killed right away. They have got to be removed. You don't want to kill them today. You want to fire them. So they are gone immediately. Now, if you call somebody into your office and you ask them in private, what do you think? And they give you a well-reasoned answer, well, that might be somebody you can trust. But anybody who contradicts you in public, or anybody who even gives you a frank opinion in public, is a danger and must be removed. So shrewdness, cruelty, deceit, stinginess, these are the qualities of a great leader. Let's look back in history, Machiavelli says. Let's look at the examples I have given you. If you will study the examples I give you carefully, I spend very little time, for example, talking about Alexander the Great. I mention Caesar only to criticize his being too lavish in his gifts. I focus instead upon mediocrities. Why, the Roman emperor that I give the most space to is Septimius Severus. Who, you say, is Septimius Severus? Emperor from 193 to 211 A.D. Why is he important? Because Septimius Severus was a man of extraordinarily mediocre ability. But he rose to be emperor of Rome. He held that power for 18 years. He passed it on to his sons. And he died in old age, still emperor. How? By realizing he wasn't the smartest person in the world, and by practicing every one of these qualities I have given to you. He was as stingy as possible. He was as deceitful as possible, time and time again, leading his opponents to think he would make up with them and then killing them. He was cruel, as when he rode his horse over the dead body of one of his opponents. And always able to sniff out a threat. Now that is what you want to be, a Septimius Severus. The lion falls into traps because he is so courageous. The fox sniffs them out and lives on. Be a fox, not a lion. Perhaps the greatest practitioner of Machiavelli, this guide to how to be successful, and don't blame me any more than I blame Machiavelli. His lessons are as valid today as they were when he presented them to Lorenzo de' Medici in hopes of getting a job back in 1513. The most successful practitioner was Joseph Stalin. Hitler may have read Machiavelli every night, but he ended dead, committing suicide. Stalin lived on to die full of age and honors. He lived on to transform his country from using the wooden plow to being an atomic power. He led his nation to victory in the greatest war they ever fought. And he did it by cruelty, by shrewdness, by following every precept of Machiavelli. Not, I suspect, because he had really studied Machiavelli, though he was a man of some learning, but because Machiavelli simply embodies what makes a successful power seeker. And remember what Trotsky, the great opponent of Stalin, said about Stalin. Joseph Stalin is a mediocrity, but he is not a nonentity. So you don't have a 4.0 GPA, and you're not a person of superb moral quality. Believe me, you can end up rich and powerful if you'll follow Machiavelli.